Hello, Scorpio, and welcome to all of us here. Your 2021 extended reading. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for a while. I have spent most of the day doing a second detailed analysis of your planets for 2021 and beyond, though this reading is mostly designed to go for about a year, though they always have lasting value. Some of the transits go on for a while. And there are a few really top-level themes, but I think that the one above all else is what I would call moral courage. Perhaps it's my prejudice, but I consider Scorpios to be among the very strongest people. Sometimes that exists as a potential. Sometimes it manifests in a direct way that you express and share with the world, but it is there. And I want to remind you of that in these incredibly trying, needlessly difficult times that we are in. And I would encourage you to be very bold about understanding the true nature of the global scenario that is impacting you and everyone that you know. Leave no stone unturned. You are also gifted with what I would consider superior intelligence, but also the ability to see through people. You do not like bullshit. You perhaps put up with a bit too much of it, but now is not the time to not see through bullshit or to put up with it. Leadership emerges as one of these direct expressions of moral courage, and I would add leadership of a kind that you just may not be interested in or never thought you would involve yourself with or want to bother with. And there are things that are going to be inconvenient if you fully engage your astrology, but convenience is not the measure of anything. I'm not saying impossible. I'm not saying any other shade of impossible. I'm just saying that to do your astrology well, you're going to need to go out of your way. And this isn't a time when everyone is being made to change essentially every routine, every expectation, every concept of time, our idea of an experience of who our friends are and how we relate to family. Every single intimate relationship has been affected. Every single economic relationship has in some way been affected. Unless we're talking about all the Bernie Madoff dudes, or if you're someone managing the Facebook stock portfolio, maybe you're a little bit busier than usual and drinking a little bit better champagne than usual, but that's not most of us. The theme of stability in the world is a top-tier issue right now. And as a fixed sign, you are one of the foundation stones of stability. All of the fixed signs, or let's say most of them, have their version, no, all of them, have their version of ongoing change, and there is a kind of theme when we're talking about anything fixed where the only constant is change, right? We know this about the world. The tide just keeps coming in and coming out. The earthquakes and the tsunamis happen and they reshape the coastline. And so often your life is lived at the point of tension between stability and change. And while you may not have been experiencing the world as particularly stable for the past few years, there have been some big changes in that regard, which I will share with you in a moment, where something has distinctly stabilized. And yet, you know, this is calling for, as usual, more working that tension between what is and what is becoming. And people are going to look to you for stability and leadership because that is simply who you are. And you may have a bit of the reluctant hobbit in you, but the truth is that you possess the necessary elements to be a reference point for others, and you have a gift for holding it all together, particularly in professional and family environments. This is where people look to you, whether you realize it or not, as the person who is a kind of a bellwether of what is going on. And so it is, in my view, given that you are likely to be drafted into some role of preserving stability and holding it all together many times, that you really be good at taking care of yourself and that you know what your bottom line is in terms of self-care. Whatever else may be going on involving other people and whatever responsibilities you have to them, there is a what I would call a private, personal bottom line of your maintaining your self-care, your knowing exactly, precisely how to take care of yourself, who you should trust on any matter of wellness or medical importance, including the very basic day-to-day of remaining whole and healthy and removing as many of the compromises that are being placed on us now that distinctly impact health and wellness, your health and your wellness. So I'm going to start in houses 6 and 7. In fact, I'm going to start with house number 7, your opposite sign, Taurus. As you know, in my method of reading for one sign, I read all 12 signs in the context of your sign. This is the elegant beauty of the solar chart. And you have Taurus as your opposite sign. So Scorpio is opposite Taurus, so this works if you're Scorpio Sun or Scorpio Rising. Whichever reference point we use, we're starting with the sign, Scorpio. And one thing that this tells me about you inherently is that you look to your one-to-one relationships as being the main ground of your stability. Now, a lot of people do this, right? But it's particularly important for you. And there's a certain kind of stability that is described by Taurus, which is a truly steadfast, power of being able to sustain commitment over many long years. And so this works both for you as a mirror, where you can see something about yourself, and it also works as something as an indicator of your environment, of what is happening in your environment, what the world looks and feels like to you. And there is something materialistic about Taurus, which could manifest just as a love of beautiful things and of quality, but it's also about a love of beautiful people and the qualities that they have. And so the people that I would presume that you respect the most are the ones who know how to keep showing up, are the ones who are good for their word. And this puts a responsibility on you to be good for your word. And that means for everyone, right? Jesus talked about when you do this for the least of my brethren. So this is not just about how you treat your primary relationship partner or the members of your close family. It's about your relationship to every person in your life, whether you know them or not. Right? Could be somebody you pass on the street who you need to assist in some way. It could be someone who just finds their way to you seeking some form of assistance that you know that one way or another you can offer. And there is real dharma in this, acting as if to hold the world together. And what we are seeing right now are many instances of people who have the opportunity to hold the world together and who have the ability to do so in their little way, right? We're not talking about the whole world. And dharma translates to acting as if to hold the world together. So there is a condition on it, which in a sense makes it general to every decision you make and every transaction that you have with another person. And so an example of a dharmic activity is any form of betrayal, greed, taking advantage of someone who is not in a strong position. And these are all things that would defy your nature. And so what I'm suggesting is that you take a very high road here and go in exactly the opposite direction and make sure that you position yourself as the person who is dependable to others on whatever level that might be, and that you are always doing your part. And to make sure, I would say a little more than your part, that you respond to need that you perceive by asking yourself, what can I do here? What's my part? How can I help resolve this one little problem that I'm aware of, and therefore act as if to hold the world together? Now, the challenge has come in the form of a new influence in your environment that began in the spring of 2018, if that time and whatever place it represents and circumstances means anything to you. And the change was the planet Uranus entering your seventh house, Taurus. And this has had an effect on your relationships, where it has created or symbolized at least a situation where you are experiencing people who are not so stable, who are not necessarily so good for their commitments, who may be outwardly rebelling against the whole idea of commitment and of tradition in some way. And this may be affecting, and may have been for a few years, affecting your relationships directly. If people decide that they are not, you know, they or decide is always true, and yet to them it may not feel like a decision. It may feel like they're in some way overwhelmed, or I think, as is going on quite a bit in the world, why bother? Fuck it. It's all going to hell anyway. And this can be very challenging to you in whatever form it may take, some brazen, overt form, some simple form, in some small transaction that, you know, you might not think you would normally notice. But in any event, you are the mediator of all of those realities. You are the thing that responds. And the way to respond is to continue to show up and to continue to be stable, unless you figure out that someone is actually getting hurt in the process. If there's some intentional act going on. And the only way to do that is to use what are, in truth, very high-order communication skills that are at the root of your whole concept of intimacy. Now, Uranus is a truly disruptive influence. I would caution that at the in around the third week, well, let's get this exact. We have lived through in 2020 6 months associated with Mars retrograde. This is still going on. Mars has just left its shadow phase, so it is now entered new territory. Just a few days ago, for the first time since it entered Aries in July. On January 6th, Mars enters your opposite sign, Taurus. This may inflame and in some ways exacerbate any such situation that I am describing. On the 20th, and it makes aspects immediately upon entering the seventh house. Then on the 20th, there is a potentially volatile event that you will need to be very open for and forgiving of, and that mainly means understanding of, remembering that all throughout this journey of dealing with others in their less stable form, in their flakier form, that you are not to take this on. And that means taking blame for it, and it means taking responsibility for it, and all of that. But to do your part to help, unless there is some intentional harm going on, or you know that it is unhealthy, and that is when you would need to take a step back, because you're juggling two sets of priorities. One is to act in a dharmic way, as if to hold the world together. The second is to be mindful constantly of your need to take care of yourself so that you can be that stable person, that person who is able to respond. And it would be preferable if you would work them in the order of taking care of yourself first, so that you are able to take care of others. And it is easy to get distracted. The world is now particularly demanding of stand-up people, of mensch types of people who were being called upon to brook all kinds of insults, injuries, and accusations. And so this is where not taking on blame and responsibility are responsibility for the conduct of others, but rather total responsibility for your response. And before that, preparation to be this person who is being called upon to act in a way that in our time is a bit superhuman, and which is sadly not fully acknowledged, not fully appreciated. Okay, so one other thought about Taurus and what's going on there. Over the past few years, a bit longer longer back than the entry of Uranus, another influence entered, which is previously known in many years of my readings as 1992 QB1. It was finally named. It's called Albion. Its co-discoverer, Dave Jewett, gave it that name. And what Albion is about is something much more profound than all of this ripping and tugging at the world. And in a sense, Albion is the very picture of Dharma. It is the very model of how to live your life in such a way that holds the world together. And there is likely to be one example of someone in your life. There might be two, but these people are few and far between. However, it is a near certainty that there will be one person who will be able to set the example for you and also be able to provide assistance for you. And one thing that I suggest that you remember is that anything anyone does is a form of a teaching example. And so that means that anything that you do is a form of a teaching example. And that includes when you do really helpful things that don't seem to get the exemplary response that they should have, like someone appreciating you or seeming to. That really can't be a factor. But also that everything everyone else does in your life is an example for you. I mean, one day it just dawned on me, this difference between what parents, for example, say to their children and the power that has, and what they do to their children and the power that has. The words are close to a total abstraction, verging on meaningless, unless someone is very observant and potentially able to parse out the hypocrisy of other people. Because words only count for so much when someone is impressionable. So, for example, in this teaching environment that we are in right now, what counts for more than my words is just the mere fact that I am being thoughtful and have shown up. Right? My words would matter a lot less without the full commitment behind them. So that's the real example. And if you think back through your life of all the times that people said one thing and did another thing, and ask yourself, what was the thing that really got through to you? What was the thing that led you to make up your mind about what is so and what is the right thing to do? This is the power of example. And you are, I think, particularly abhorrent of hypocrisy. And so that means that you need to have sensitive and perhaps clever ways of dealing with it. in the world and then also being vigilant about it in yourself. That would mean making sure that all of your words are backed by actions. Right? This is about showing up. It's about being a mensch in the time when people really need to like figure out how important that is, that there are just people who show up. And so whoever this example is, whoever this person is who is able to hold up a light and perhaps be in some way supportive, whether it's directly or indirectly, try to identify the potential candidates for who that person is and establish a relationship with that person where there is an exchange of energy and information and commitment and love and respect so that you have got that going on. You have got that energy circuit there to depend upon. Having one dependable person in your life makes all the difference in the world. And for you, dependable means a sane person who tells the truth and who is able to embrace the many different dimensions of the facts of life, because ultimately that is going to be you in the lives of many, many other people. Now, let's begin the discussion of work and wellness. I'm going to honor the scheduled break at about 32 minutes, and then if I'm not finished with this topic, I will pick it up again. I don't think I'm going to say everything I need to say in 4 minutes, but let's get started, and I'm going to do my best to first offer a summary, and then expand that. And here, I think, is the pin in the pinwheel of your astrology, the thing holding the whole spiral together. And this involves your sense of your wellness and your relationship to the work that you do, which includes the actual work. It includes the purpose of whatever company or purpose that you are involved with. Most people end up working for a company or having clients. So your relationship to them and their teaching example is crucial. And then how you biologically and psychically, which contains the full spectrum of emotional and mental responses to your environment, how you coexist with your environment. So one of the things that is in some ways dictating the quality of your life is everything about your work environment. That does not matter where it is, right? If you're working from home remotely, then the mental environment of the people that you're working with counts. Your relationship to them, the quality of your work area, the air that you breathe in your work area, the ergonomics of the work area that you have, and all of the ways that this physically impacts, influences, or in any way relates to your bodily and psychic well-being. And in any such environment, you are likely to be the most observant person of any problem, flaw, defect, or let's say toxic or negative influence. And as the person aware of it, you are the first line of defense for the universe in terms of taking care of it and making sure that it is addressed. And so this would imply that in addressing an issue for yourself, you're also doing so for the other people who are not quite in a position to make the same observation or to take any similar action because for whatever reason, they're not as strong or as wise as you are. And so whether we're talking about taking care of yourself or taking care of your total environment, there is no way to delegate this responsibility, because in the end, it all comes back to you. Your body is the body that keeps the score for you. And that means that your biological and psychic process in your environment is going to also be the thing that others observe, that they relate to, and that they take an example from, and that ultimately make their choices about. And this may seem like a lot of responsibility, which is true, because that is the essence and the nature of your astrology. And people, which I will get into when I finish this discussion of Chiron in the sixth house, are being drawn to you in almost every quarter of your chart. They are being drawn to you. And we might ask why. Back in a moment. By the way, is a real audience I personally recorded back in November during what I was in my Hunter S. Thompson version of reporting the story in my mind. I haven't written it yet. Is the most radical underground meeting I've ever attended, where 100 people gathered in a secret location in the mountains of rural New York State to discuss biology. That's right. The revolution will be biological, which fits perfectly with the theme of Aries in your sixth house. So you should know that in the great mandala of the Scorpio chart, the all-important sign Aries lands six signs from yours. This is the key to divining astrologically, is understanding the way that these placements work. And so when Aries is six signs away, you're going to do all those Aries things in the sixth place or sixth house. And all those Aries things are where you center your quest for being. And the sixth house is work, service, wellness as one concept. Little bit of trivia from classical astrology. There's this thing called the joys of the houses. It's sort of like planets that rule houses regardless of what sign is involved. Because when you've got Aries on the sixth, then the ruler of Aries becomes the ruler of the sixth. That's Mars. Mars also rules the sixth anyway. In other words, Mars finds its joy. It's kind of a weird name. It's translated from ancient Greek. In the sixth house. Now, why would that be? Well, the origins of the sixth house are military service. That's when you go all the way back to the egg of what the sixth house is about and why we get people like, you know, Clara Barton and Florence Nightingale showing up in the sixth, you know, the great nurses, and the military nurses, for example. That's about military service, which becomes service. And then there's always going to be a medical theme connected with that, which we get. And then there's a training theme connected with that, which becomes a teaching theme connected with that, which becomes the daily work. And then when we translate that into kind of modern astrological theology, we come up with a general meta theme of work and wellness, which means where work meets wellness. And because you have Aries there, this is where you're going to find yourself. Yes, you do lots of things, right? But if your work is not going well, you can feel like you don't know who you are, and frankly, it doesn't matter, which is why it is of primo importance that you have work you relate to, work where you can be yourself at work. This is very few people. Very few people. I forget what I was reading lately. It may have been some tome on socialism and utopias where in like the ideal world, everyone's motivated to do what they do because it's the thing that they do and it's the passion that they have. And if you make candles for 50 years, it's the thing that you really want to do. Well, it actually turns out that people are more motivated by a paycheck than they are by finding themselves through their daily dharma. I don't know how this works for anyone, but I can tell you that it is not going to work for you. You have to relate to what you do. What you do has to enhance you. There has to be some, you have to enhance it. You have to make your workplace a better place. And then no matter what, you are going to be a point of reference in such style that is usually thought of as informal leadership. Not necessarily the manager, maybe the manager, but not necessarily the manager, but the person that everyone in the environment looks to for a clue. And if you have a clue, you're doing a lot better than most people, especially these days. Now, this has been a bit rough. Say, let's say from like 2011 through 2018, it looks like the astrology tells me that there was a lot of experimentation going on. There was a lot of exploring and probably some important job change, possibly a career change, but certainly one or more job changes. Then all of that settled down and stabilized sometime around early 2018, when two supremely important planets in your chart changed signs. One of them was Uranus, which we talked about in the first section, which is about this kind of flake factor and a restlessness factor in your more intimate relationships and partnerships. While that was going on, and you were, you know, figuring out what that was about, Chiron entered your sixth house. Chiron is very good at grounding what astrologers call Uranian energy. Chiron is the thing that knows how to catch lightning in a bottle. Chiron is also the lightning rod that can channel the energy around the house and into the ground. I mean, someone should really be sending Ben Franklin thank you notes every day for lightning rods, because the chances are 100% that the building you're in has not burned down because there is a lightning rod somewhere protecting it. And Chiron serves as that lightning rod. It can get struck, but then it knows how to ground the energy into the earth where it can do no harm. And in many other ways, Chiron's relationship to structure, that is to say, the meeting of structure and energy, is quite like this. So you could look at this other ways. There's lots of metaphors. So, for example, if we think of a wall, Chiron is the door in the wall. If we think of two islands or bodies of land separated by a body of water, Chiron is the bridge or the tunnel that connects them. And so Chiron is a conduit of consciousness, and it is going to serve as a focal point of consciousness. And so Chiron, having entered Aries, activates in a very distinctive way this most important part of your chart. And by the way, particularly meaningful if you are approaching or recently were in the past year or two age 50, because that's the Chiron return. And if you are approaching age 50, let's say if you're 44 or older, you are having your Chiron return in Aries in your sixth house at some point soon. I don't have those dates. It would be worth doing a whole teaching on the Chiron return in Aries. It would be useful and fairly easy to do that. But bear in mind that that is happening. And bear in mind that if you are in that age when many people seek astrology, their late 40s, you are having this turnover moment, this moment of emerging into a new level of full maturity. If you are younger than that, or if you've already had your Chiron return, then the placement of Chiron in your sixth is just an activation of the sixth house. And an activation of the sixth house means to fully engage this process of where your work meets your purpose, meets your well-being, meets the total environment that in any way influences your well-being. And one way to see Chiron is as a point of focalization and stabilization. Another way to see Chiron is as a possible series of crises that happen that show you where your system of self-care is broken and needs to be fixed. So one of the things Chiron does very well is identify the weak part of the system, the weak link in the chain. People with strong Chiron are almost always system busters in the world, in the words of the Bringers of the Dawn, one of my favorite channeled works. Channeled by Barbara Marciniak of the Pleiadians, and they talk about system busters in that book. And Chiron serves as the kind of universal system buster. And so you may be like seeing systems bust, whatever that system may be. And then you notice that you're the person aware of the system busting, and then therefore you're the person who's, you know, the universe is tapping on your shoulder to be the one who starts to investigate and apply the solution. And we are in a time of systems busting on a cosmic scale. The most important system that you can take care of is your biopsychic system, your body and your mind, which means your feelings and your spiritual presence and all of the ways in which these relate to your physical body. The physical body right now is under assault from every direction. This includes this complete over-emergence in digital that we are experiencing, and it includes all of these strange effects of the whole global crisis of 2020, which all involve in some way attempting to intrude upon the integrity of the body. I would humbly propose that you not be excited about any of these intervention methods. They are all designed to attack and intrude upon the integrity of the body. None of them that I know of, and I have spent way too much time up at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning reading about this stuff, in any way helps. The only thing that will help you is your attending to the holistic principle in your own life. The holistic principle is understanding the way in which your beingness interrelates with every facet of the world in which you live in, whether it's the air you breathe, how you breathe, where you live, where you work, what you do, how you treat people, how people treat you, the food that you eat. We could keep going on. But in the sixth, there's a lot about the daily activity that you get involved with, right? The sixth is like ritual de lo habitual. I'm not pronouncing that right. I'm not a Spanish speaker. But that is this beautiful concept from Spanish culture, because it's in the Spanish language, so I imagine it's part somehow a concept out of whatever Spanish culture is, which is the ritual of the things that you just do. What you know, Buddhists talk about chopping wood and carrying water, or sweeping the ashram, which can involve the grocery shopping, the maintenance of your car, the maintenance of your body, which are cars kind of a metaphor for maintenance of the body. And more than anything, your relationship and your awareness of your state of mind. Chiron has a lot to do with the state of mind, the state of consciousness. And it is arguable and in some ways provable that all of physical reality is mediated by state of mind. Based on the exact same circumstances, a person will make one decision in one state of mind that could really help them, and another decision in a different state of mind that could be quite deleterious and detrimental to them. State of mind goes even further than that and has a way of just creating the whole reality around us and the vibration that we interrelate with it as. And so this is why maintaining awareness of your state of mind, as simple as, I'm feeling shitty, I don't understand that dream I had this morning, I don't want to go to work, these people annoy me, I love this person, I love what I do, thank God for my cat. Then you quickly pick your cat up and dance around with it for a minute. I feel this way about my workplace, I dread going in, I love going in, I'm going to do what I can today to fix it. I don't like this job. I want to find something else. Therefore, I'm going to take action finding a new one. All of that awareness of the most rudimentary basic things that you do every day, including the clothes that you wear and how you feel in them and just how everyone treats everyone, all affects your state of mind. So the idea of Chiron 6 Aries for you is to be constantly aware of your state of mind and all the ups and downs and twists and turns, and then learn how to make that airplane glide or fly. Another matter of Chiron in the 6 is going to be the need to have a trustworthy health consultant of some kind. Almost everyone needs to have at least one good medical doctor in their life, but that is not enough. The problem with medicine, as it has been created and taught and manifest in our era, and particularly its connection to the insurance system, to the government, and its almost exclusive dependency upon pharmaceutical substances, all of which are toxic. They might be more toxic, they might be less toxic, they might be prescribed in a way that is only minimally invasive, they might be prescribed in a way that is very invasive, but the problem with modern medicine is its lack of holistic consciousness. Its lack of understanding of the way that everything affects everything else. Its obsession with specialization. Ooh, we're going to send you to the podiatrist will refer you to a doctor who will specializes in the middle toe. That is almost not a joke. And your job is to hold center of holistic consciousness. Look up some theories about this. There are words you can that kind of convey the idea beautifully. One of them is synergy. The whole is more than the substance of the parts. Another is biophilia, which is a way of saying that biological systems are far more than all their little bits and their little critters, and that things done to one thing affect other things. And if DDT is sprayed in a forest and it lands on the leaves, and the leaves fall to the forest floor, and then the worms eat the leaves, and then the birds eat the worms, and the DDT has a reproductive effect on the birds, and then the birds' eggshells are too thin, and the baby birds are not born, the forest goes silent, and all the birds die. It's not simply that the spray killed the birds. So holistic means to tune up, be aware of, take care of the total ecosystem of your life. This can take years to get right. And anybody who's doing holistic work of any kind understands that this just goes on and on and on. And you've just and then as the world changes and as you change, as your body changes, as you age, as you grow, you have to constantly keep adjusting and adapting here. And this is the medical philosophy that I would suggest working with, and that if you're going to work with a medical doctor, make sure that at least you've got a medical doctor who gets the concept, who's not just going to treat symptoms, who's going to look at things using whole system thinking. But I would suggest someone who is a really good whole system thinker. They could be anyone. It could be a therapist. It could be a homeopath. It could be a naturopath. It could be an herbalist. It could be just a wise person. But there is someone indicated here as a teacher who's going to help you understand this and learn this model and learn this mode. And there are some really good ones. There are some charlatans. In terms of public teachers, I am in love with Sayer G, and I forget his wife's name. She's a little more radical, but you'll get, if you listen to Sayer G, he gives a good teaching example of what it means to think holistically. And holistically favors you. It favors your wholeness. It favors your peace of mind. Holistic consciousness understands that your state of mind is ultimately the state of your being. You could be in any circumstances at all. If your state of mind is level and you're able to make decisions and you are able to move through whatever space you're in, you're fine. You're fine. The problem with holistic consciousness is not supported by the medical model. The medical model we are in, I mean, there's a lot of talk of medical tyranny, but the truth is that we've been under a tyrannical medical model since the death of the homeopathic colleges in the early 20th century, which was an intentional act to make everything into oil-based medicine. And so many people are convinced that there's just one way to do things and that the doctor knows everything. They miss the fact that most doctors don't know anything, and that there's many ways to do things, and that quite often old ways work better than new ways. Old drugs work better than new drugs almost all the time. The new drugs are just being invented for the sake of patents. The old drugs are tried and true. They have very long histories, and you can find out what you're getting. But ultimately, it is thinking whole system. It's thinking about the food you eat, the water you drink, the air you breathe, and how all these things affect your, resonate through your state of mind. Because so much disease is psychogenic. It is just the product of the state of mind, and that is something that is just running rampant through society right now, where people are just not getting how dangerous it is to the well-being of every person to be living in a society obsessed with fear. And so if that in any way affects you, any along any point of the spectrum where it could intervene based on current events, that is some place to insert your curiosity and allow yourself to learn how to learn. And it would help to have somebody you can bounce this off of, someone who's been through a lot, someone who's worked with a lot of people, who takes a broad-minded, open-minded approach. and who more than anything is not afraid and not suggesting that you be afraid. Because fear is never the answer. It is a condition. It exists on the planet. It is a fact of human conditions as much as the ability to clap one's hands is a reality that fear exists. But what we do with it, how we handle it, whether we learn from it or not, what the choices we make in response, and whether it is seen as a good in itself. And I think that if anything is just like chalk on a blackboard these days, it's this idea going around that fear is some kind of holy sacrament that is proof of one's virtue and wisdom. And that is just going to fry your nerves. You need to keep breathing, drinking the best water you can get, eating the foods that you know nourish you and don't in any way inflame you, and just make taking care of yourself a priority. Because as we get into the next topic in this discussion, which is all the ways in which leadership is finding you, you need to be in a solid, stable, whole state of being to be able to fulfill your role. And when you fulfill your role, you find happiness, even in the midst of all kinds of weirdness and strangeness and flakiness and instability and all of that stuff. So let's go back into the room with Dr. Cowan and a little music from Vision Quest, and I'll be back in a moment. To sum up my holistic rant, there is, much to be learned from The Organon by Samuel Hahnemann. But one of the things he says to physicians in training, by which he meant homeopaths, is, if it aggravates, remove it. That is to say, if you know you're allergic to something, don't eat it. If you know that something you do aggravates or inflames you, or hurts you in some way, don't do it. This can be, it can feel like making a sacrifice. I mean, I remember my transition into being gluten-free as an adult. It took some time to break each one of those habits, but in the end, I'm much better for it. And so I would propose getting every unnecessary chemical out of your kitchen, bathroom, and garage. By chemical, I mean everything from shampoo to turpentine. See if you can get as close to soap, baking soda, and vinegar and water as you can get for all of your household cleaning needs, including taking care of your body. Lot of chemicals. And so you are on health alert in the sense of be preventive and proactive. Okay, so that sums that up. The whole group thing, it just keeps showing up. From numerous angles, numerous different positions. And it does so in the form of presenting you as a kind of a rock of your community. No matter how you may feel, You have become a central focus, a kind of an elder. I mean, you might be 40 or 30 or something like that, but still, that responsibility of like tribal leadership goes to the person who is called upon, not necessarily fully ready yet, but in any event, it looks like a number of ways this might be you. And I want to go through the permutations of this and begin by saying that we are in a time when anything and everything social is under massive attack and being forcibly pushed onto the internet, therefore regulated, can be turned off, can be disappeared, like a mirage that was not real. So in your inherent solar chart with no planets, just positions of signs and houses, Leo on the 10th is a position of family and corporate leadership. It largely bestows two things. One is just a charm and charisma. I know that the anti-fans of Scorpio are probably laughing at that. I don't know how many anti-fans of Scorpio are listening to this reading. Maybe they're here to get some opposition intelligence, but there is a certain je ne sais quoi about you, and part of that comes from having Leo on the 10th. Additionally, you have Aquarius on the 4th, the home angle, the security angle, and that means that you innately seek your security in groups, and the first group is family, and so family, by dint of that, is important to you, and if that is not family of origin, it can easily be family of choice, but there is something that is activating about family of origin, and this, by the way, will be both your paternal and maternal side, though with a slight emphasis on dad's side of the family. I'm going to add planets in a second. Next, in Scorpio, is a point called Apollon. It is a planet without a body. I talk about them at least once in every reading, and there's 8 of them, and they're very strange, and they only exist in mathematical models and in, therefore, astrology programs and a scant few books and in the minds of astrologers, but they are real. And Apollon is the point of gathering, which is you, because it's new in your sign. Like a number of these trans-Neptunian points, it has recently changed signs. And this is what you've got going on in your signs. This openly makes you a point of gathering. Taurus on the 7th, one way to read Uranus and Taurus in the 7th, which we began with or talked about close to the beginning, is the presence of groups. And also, this involves one-on-one relationships, having some relationship to groups as well. And this is important to take on in a positive light, because it is so sometimes challenging to one-on-one relationships for there to be other people involved. But it's important for you to have fun with this and take it in stride. And also, in addition to groups and multiple people, it can involve the presence of weirdos, because Uranus can represent weirdos. And so you've got to decide what you're going to do with them. And those slippery people help us understand, as David Byrne said. And so when you encounter someone like that, find a home for them, find a place for them, unless you determine that they are actually disruptive in some way, intentionally disruptive, not merely that they might rub you or someone the wrong way. But the thing mainly about Uranus is it's going to bring groups together. Aquarius, which is always extant in your fourth house, which makes your house a kind of a, Not necessarily a youth hostel. I mean, a lot of Sagittarians have homes that are like youth hostels. It could function as a youth hostel. But it's going to be the place where the extended family and the family of origin will tend to gather. And now with Saturn and Jupiter having entered this house, I suggest you open up the house that it represents to people and be the place where people can gather. And I would suggest that you have no fear and that you associate with people who have less or no fear rather than people who are frantic. People who are frantic are unlikely to socialize. But here is what is going on. People are going to be getting increasingly desperate for human contact as 2021 evolves. This whole distancing thing has no basis in truth, no basis in reality. There is no asymptomatic spread of whatever this thing they're claiming is going around. I have scientific proof of this from a massive study of 9.5 million people in Wuhan, in the former war zone, an actual blind, peer-reviewed study that was not released like 5 minutes after it was done, but was rather released something like 4 months after it was submitted. And so that's when a study is a good study, and so far in no way refuted. So I'm suggesting that you have no fear, that you be the place of no fear, that you be the teacher of no fear, that humans cannot be afraid to be tribal beings because we are tribal beings. And the way to conquer a society is to shatter its tribal structure and its relationship structure. And then there's nothing left. People have no trust and no ability to trust and no place to gather, no place to be together, no place to have a conversation. And it is likely and verging on inevitable that to some great degree you are going to be the place where people want to gather because they're going to trust that you don't have any fear. So get that into your body, get that into your soul. The damage being done by this is intentionally not being added up. There is an agenda behind a 24-hour campaign of fear and a campaign of blotting out every possible viewpoint that is different. And so this is one of the reasons why I am saying get smart, get informed. I understand this is not an easy thing to bring your knowledge level up to a confidence level, but a lot of work has been done on this. And so this is all about people wanting to and needing to gather around you and you being a natural point of magnetism. I suggest that the theme of the people gathering around you be less about recreation, though it can include recreation, and more about healing and discussing healing, a bit of the biology underground. You are in a perfect position to bring the discussion of holistic health and wellness to your circle of friends and to have that be a real and dependable thing that they join you for. This is about having Virgo on the 11th house. And the beautiful thing about having Virgo on the 11th house is now there is Virgo is in itself a holistic influence. It's similar to Aries in Chiron in your 6th house. The 6th house and Virgo have a resonance. They're not carbon copies of each other, but they have a resonance. And you have Virgo way out in public as the as the defining theme of the groups that you attract among those who are not your relatives. And also as a potential professional calling. There are going to be gatherings of relatives. Then there's this extended circle of friends. And so part of the not having fear quality is going to be guiding the extended circle of friends into the purpose of the discussion of understanding fear and understanding wellness and understanding the essential nature of the tribal body on the health of the individual and the whole community. One nice thing is that Mercury retrograde, you've got Virgo on that house, it's ruled by Mercury, is going to take place in a bunch of different houses, all of them being air signs. So the first Mercury retrograde coming up is going to be in Aquarius. That takes place in February. And that is going to help you make the adjustments and rearrangements and identify the nucleus of the family leadership, the actual blood relative tribal leadership. And if you're looking for people to assist you, join you, collaborate with you, again, look on dad's side of the family, including dad's wife, if he's not married to your mom, and dad's brothers, i.e. your uncles or great uncles. Okay. Next Mercury retrograde takes place in Gemini, another Mercury ruled sign. This is an interesting one, and I'll cover some of the themes of Mercury retrograde in Gemini in this breath. Scorpio is known for its depth around the taboo issues and never really being subject to taboo. In the sense that, like, you're spooked and don't want to talk about it, you're the person who goes for the facts of life, and who will who will get the most likely to make people uncomfortable at the Thanksgiving table award, assuming there is a Thanksgiving table. And this is part of what makes people spooked about Scorpios is the association between sex and death with Scorpio. It's like, there are few concepts in the zodiac that are more that make people believe in astrology more than Scorpio, and the way you know they believe in astrology is the way they respond to all things Scorpio. And the thing about you that the working edge of that for you is your ability to be conversant. And your ability to check out both sides of the issues and not necessarily want to be so biased going into any discussion, you're more likely to want to evaluate things from a number of different sides and figure out how the two different sides relate, first of all. And this involves your conversations with intimate partners, particularly spouses. Lovers where there is both money and sex exchanged, and the in-laws family, i.e. Close partners, parents and siblings, and others in the partner's family. So the partner's family enters through Gemini, through the eighth, always. Might come in other places, but the place to look, the special door that says in-laws, is there. And so this is a time to reach out to them. And in terms of the legacies, wills, and trusts affairs of the eighth, this is a good year to get all of that in order. You will feel better for doing so. Review your investments, review your assets, and determine who you want your heirs to be. And this includes heirs to your intellectual property, if that applies to you as well, i.e. any form of an artist, photographer, musician, or author. You want your creative legacy protected, and I assure you that you will feel better for doing so. And have the conversation. This Mercury retrograde takes place while we're here. Though I don't have the Gemini chart with the dates written on it, let's just do a quick search again in Sprite. Stations, Mercury, retrograde. Okay, so the following, January 30th through February 20th. That's nice and tidy. May 29th through June 22nd. That's pretty tidy. The 3 weeks before the summer solstice in the north, winter solstice in the south, and 1.41 days after. And then the Mercury retrograde of September during Sun and Libra time takes place in Libra, exclusively in Libra. And this is about your relationship to yourself and a discussion with yourself about the secrets that you keep from yourself. So know that this is coming up, and this could easily be a theme that spreads out and applies into the entire year. And the thing with this 12th housey stuff, which for you is Libra, the sign house before yours, is that the unresolved material of the 12th has a way of showing up as shadow material in the 7th. And so this is to say, the more at peace with yourself you are, the more at peace you'll be with others, and the more you'll see through their mishigas and be able to make the adjustments in yourself that help you sidestep and adequately assess and evaluate their stuff. And so 12th is an intimate place. It's a little bit of a strange place because you enter a kind of a parallel world. And all of this I've just described about around Mercury retrograde, all of this review and assessment of people and assessment of your communication with people, all factors right back into this role of being the, let's say, chairman of the healing committee in your own life. This ad hoc committee of friends with whom you can have the discussion of the healing journey, with whom you can be real. With Chiron going through your sixth house the way that it is, you are likely to make some real discoveries about your gifts and your assets, and you can use your superior knowledge of human nature to find others who have gifts and assets and help them introduce those to the community. Some really special stuff here. Finally, the leadership part of Leo is activated by two important points. Vulcanus, another one of those mysterious things without a body, and a very long, perfectly circular orbit, which is about, think of a volcano. That's a lot of energy. It basically is a tap into the geothermal power of the planet that has not cooled. I mean, we think of all of our heat coming from the sun, but the fact is that the planet is itself emanating a lot of warmth. And if you're down there under the ground and it's 55 degrees and it doesn't feel that warm, it would feel a lot colder at like negative 100. And so you are a source of this geothermal heat and warmth. Additionally, there's a new influence in your 10th, recently changed signs. I don't have the ephemeris open for that. I've got to crunch it on a tool because nobody sells one, is Varuna. And Varuna is formerly a vastly important pre-Vedic creation god. Varuna also is about the fulfillment of contracts and commitments. So Varuna is depicted carrying a noose. The noose is a warning about the fulfillment of contracts and commitments. That's intense, right? And so first of all, you know, remember, a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. And you are in this role of leadership, emanating warmth and light, solar fire and now geothermal fire. And you must hold people to their commitments or consciously release them from their commitments. This is up to you. You have a lot of power of judgment. One more point in Leo is about like bridging the earth and the sky. There have been enough metaphors in this reading for this act of bridging things, of bringing together things, whether we're talking about reaching out to uncles or in-laws, whether we're talking about being the bridge between the isthmus and the mainland or whatever it might be. This shows up in your, let's say, leadership command charge. One more thought to add before we wrap up for this sign. And I know I'm a writer, on many other things, but I know that I'm a writer and that I advocate writing as a way of life. And I see a lot of fucking good emails from people, right? They share their thought in a paragraph, and I write back and say, this could be a great piece of writing that could reach people. And I would propose that you make that step, that you reach for your mastery over the written word, because your mastery over the written word would give you a superpower. And by mastery over the written word, I mean the ability to write for an audience, whether it's an audience of one or an audience of a million. Whether it is the mastery over a piece of contractual writing, which I assure you is a deep skill that you possess. The ability to not only read, assess, and sniff out the horseshit in contracts, but the power to do them, the power to make them. And when you can, always write your own agreements. And then make sure people understand them. And I would suggest that you stretch out of that discomfort zone of going from writing something good inadvertently to developing your writing into something that is going to both reach people and persuade people and give you power. You need to have sources of power. You are a fucking Scorpio. And so there is nothing more frustrating than you not having the power to make something happen that you need to make happen. And in this world, though literacy has basically gone over a cliff, and by that I mean, yes, people know how to read and write, and they're mostly functional, but I mean the ability of a book to change the world. This is the thing that's not happening. This is the kind of bottom line metric of the state of literacy. Is can a book change the world? Can a book change a person? When was the last time you read a book that really changed your life? When was the last time someone told you about a book they read that really changed your life? And so that's the problem. And I suggest you let books change your life and that you read in a scrupulous and studious way, taking notes on what you read. And as someone who's going to be involved in this holistic health scenario, both taking care of yourself and it would appear becoming a central gathering point for the biology underground, you need to be able to read and write and actually understand what is being said. And this is a skill. People read. I wonder what the comprehension level is and the retention level. And the only way to actually comprehend and retain what you've learned is to imbibe it fully and to change it in some way. Like to be writing about what you're reading while you're reading, even if I'm just taking notes in the margin. And then you write a little book report. Could be an email to someone, it could be a social media post, it could be a review, it could be an article, it could be a note to yourself. This is when you know that you are learning. And this media crisis, this literacy crisis, which has been brought on by electricity, and the wave of electricity crashed over us this year with this mirage that many people believe is absolutely real and will kill them and devastate them and all this shit, is the result of digital and electricity. And the only way out as an individual is to use a reasoning process that's going to involve reading and writing. And so there has never been a time when reading and writing have had the power to improve your life more than now, to improve the lives of the people around you more than now. But start with you, because you need to get straight with yourself about what you understand and why. And I suggest tossing belief out the window. The whole concept of belief is a very destructive concept. Get to the point where you understand things and you can say, to the best of my knowledge and reasoning, I observe the following to be true. That is very different from believing something. Save belief for fun stuff. Use that whole beautiful fifth house that you have with Pisces, with all the stuff going on, potentially a whole other discussion or essay. I will develop the fifth house in the Aquarian era reading and talk about the planets that are in Pisces and how they will affect you. But without saying too much here, perhaps just enough, your ability to express yourself visually and musically can be one of those things that also changes and genuinely improves your life. And I would strongly advise getting in there and getting relief from all things ugly by exploring and experimenting with all things beautiful, which has to start with you, you being the first thing beautiful, and a person who is coming into your own, coming into your strength and your maturity and your courage. All right, don't forget to check out your sign rising. Share this reading with someone if you think it will benefit them. Lots of love, and bye for now.